Okay, today we're going to talk about control freak. When I started teaching relationship classes in 1981, I did so with materials that were really outdated. So a lot of people didn't really benefit because they thought that the material didn't apply to them. But some of it really never changes. First of all, if you're married, if you give your husband your body, feed his ego, and feed him, he'll cherish you forever. Women are the ones who make sex complicated. Also, men like to be accepted for who they are, like all of us. Men need to be respected. And they want to know they're a top priority in their woman's lives. They love joyful and happy wives. They don't want you to fix their problems, but they love your confidence and encouragement. Also, they want their wives to be lovers, don't want to be mothered by their wives. And most men don't like women who act like they're smarter or braver than them. I think that we find universally that men appreciate kindness and generosity in their women. In fact, a lot of times I think that men like their wives or their women to be the angel on their shoulder. Men look to their wives to make their homes peaceful. And they appreciate when their wives look the best they can. Men like to feel like they are king of the castle and they need a woman that they can trust. Men usually aren't petty. They don't want wives that gossip about them either. But also men don't want women that are insisting on their own way all the time. And they appreciate being asked for favors and opinions in a respectful way. If you do a quick internet search on what men wish women knew for success in marriage, it will reinforce that some principles are timeless. Well, we want to live up to our potential as the best wife we can be, and we are going to go back to the pattern for marriage established 2,000 years ago in the Bible, and that pattern works. In the book, Sacred Influence, What a Man Needs from His Wife to Be the Husband She Wants, it recounts how David McCullough found a letter by John Adams written to his wife Abigail in the heat of the Revolutionary War. He said, "We can't guarantee success in this war, but we can do something better. We can deserve it." And you can't control another person. You can't guarantee how everything turns out when another person's actions are part of the outcome. But you can behave in a way that encourages success and makes it more likely. Now, McCullough's book also tells about Napoleon Bonaparte's letter to his wife saying, "I insist you have more strength. I am told you are always crying for shame. That is very bad. Be worthy of me and develop a stronger character. Make a proper show in Paris. If you are always weeping, I'll think you have no courage or character. I do not like cowards. An empress should have heart." I love that saying, "be worthy of me." That should be the goal of every husband and wife, is to be worthy of each other. What does it mean to live worthy? Well, in Matthew 10:38, we're told that any person who doesn't take up his cross daily to follow Jesus is not worthy of him. In other words, using the most sacrificial example of all time, being worthy should cost you sacrifice. And in Romans, it says that the Romans should receive Phoebe in a way worthy of the saints. In Ephesians, they're told to live a life worthy of the divine calling that you've been called. Simply put, we are to live a life worthy of the calling to be a wife, a helper, and a lifelong partner. The focus is not taking responsibility for another person's acts or trying to manipulate another person. Instead, we want to control our own actions, our own responses, and our own reactions. Now, how can you tell if you're becoming a control freak? How can you see the warning signs and take action? Some of these selfish tendencies are easier to spot in other people's lives and hardly ever recognized in our own unless we step back and take an accurate assessment of them or have someone who loves us honestly critique us. But if you find yourself doing any of the things that are following, take note. Do you make plans and commitments for your husband before you check with him? Sometimes it just means you're more used to having things done your own way. So it's just courtesy to check with someone else before making plans for them. Now, a lot of times my husband wants me to make the plans, but then before I finalize them, I run them by him and make sure he's okay with them and that the things that I'm planning are really things that he wants to do. I'll also say things like, do you want to commit to this engagement when you're just getting home, or would you prefer that we just leave the time open on your calendar? Sometimes it's just nice to check with him and just run it by him before you make the final plans. 2, do you monitor your husband, listen for incorrect English, scrutinize his table manners, get annoyed? Sometimes the problem isn't really with your husband, it's in your acceptance and patience levels. 3, how about the tone of voice you use to speak to your husband? Sometimes it's something you've heard on television, you think you're going to get away with it, and guess what? Those sarcastic, you know, digs and things that you see on television, they don't really get you very far in real life. So listen to your tone, calm down, communicate with the same respect and honor you want to be spoken to. Drop the condescending verbiage and learn better communication strategies so that you're not tuned out and you're listened to. 4, you need to be in control of every situation. When you need something done and you start getting really bossy about how it's done and you're micromanaging it without considering the schedule or needs of someone else, especially your husband, or if you find out like, oh, I only want to go to a few restaurants and that's it, you need to open up your circle and expand your horizons, because you probably are expecting other people to adjust to what you want to do all the time. So you want to not have insecurity issues, and you want to practice going with the flow and letting others make choices when they're with you. Why should your husband be the one who always lets you pick anyways? 5, do you tell your husband what to wear and how to handle his personal grooming? Don't get a beard. Oh, you can have a beard. You can't have a beard. You can't wear that. Now I can see I do kind of help my husband because he's colorblind. I might help him pick out some things that match, or I might say, you know, that might be a better choice. But if you're constantly belittling what he's picking out to wear or how to handle his personal grooming, you're probably entering into control freak territory. 6, are your strong opinions negatively affecting other relationships? Anyway, strong people are often respected, while the feelings of others aren't considered, and it gets old after a while. If people that are close to you are starting to make comments like your opinions are too strong, or if you find that you're measuring everybody against your opinions, everyone gets to pick their own clothes soap. They get to pick their own cleaning products. Did you ever stand in line at some of these Kroger's? It is so confusing. There are rows and rows and rows of choices. Don't always think that your choice, even if you have good reasons for it, are the only compelling reasons and it's the only product or the only thing that you can do or the only place that you can go or the place that has the only popcorn that anyone could like. Sometimes we just get too controlling. Anyways, Philippians 2:21 in the Message says, most people around here are looking out for themselves with little concern for the things of Jesus. You know, we all have a sin nature and we're all selfish, and we have been trained by society to get all we can, look out for number one, can all we can get, and go for the gusto. Jesus calls us to live a different kind of life, to humble ourselves, to deny ourselves, to consider other people better than ourselves, to love without expecting anything in return. Marriages are stronger when we look for ways to consider our spouses or other people's needs above ours and to sacrificially love with supporting and convincing actions without expecting anything in return. Remember, what you feed will grow and what you starve will die. Feed only the actions and attitudes you want to grow. Stop feeding the actions and attitudes that need to go. When you feed an action, you fuel it, you make provision for it, you make a way for it to happen, you accommodate it. You know, you want to starve an action. You take away the provision. You stop adding fuel to the fire. Stop adding information to it. Even this week, there are so many times when people will start talking about things that you really have no business talking about. Stop fueling the fire. Stop putting wood on a fire that isn't even your fire to burn. Learn when to say it is enough and to stop talking about things that you're not even entitled to have an opinion about. It will give you more accountability and take your eyes off of deficits or what you perceive to be deficits in others or even strengths in others. And it will get your eyes back on being the best you that you can be. Now, there are some habits that we want to change in our spouse, our friends, our husband, our mother, our sister, people we hang out with all the time. Sometimes it's things that just annoy us. They have bad table manners, they eat junk food, and so they make us eat junk food. They're in a bad mood, they complain, they're quick to be angry. They might leave stuff around your house or interrupt or smoke around you. It might be how people spend their money. Your husband might spend too much time playing sports or computer games, or he might sleep too much or hang with the guys too much, or even at work or at church. He might not phone you when he's delayed. He might always be checking his iPhone. That is a real current struggle these days. Or he might spend too much money on habits and hobbies and extravagant clothes. Or he might fall for risky investing schemes. Hey, I'm going to buy this foreign coin and we're going to take all of our savings out. So you might want to change that. He might be neglecting duties. He's not keeping up with the car maintenance. Things are falling apart. He might have weird social behavior. He might be loud or overzealous. He might not be very courteous. He might tease, contradict, brag, exaggerate. He might pick questionable friends or isolate himself. You know, I know that I'm always reminded of the story of Saul's daughter, Michal, who was King David's wife. And she looked down from the window and she saw David coming home celebrating a victory. And he was dancing wildly. And he was in the streets. He was dancing and everyone was shouting out praises to him. And she looked down and she didn't like the way he was dancing and that he only had a little cover-up on, and she despised him in her heart. And it's interesting because it says after that that Michal was barren in her life after that. And sometimes I think we despise little things that our husbands do and we end up having barrenness in the things our life produces because we're wasting time scrutinizing our husband. Anyways, he might have wrong desires, what you think. He might be indecisive or afraid to take advantage of opportunities. He might not want to get ahead, or he might be consumed with success. He might have unrealistic dreams or might have dreams that require significant risk. He might not be a leader in the family, or he might not take an interest in training your children. He might have different religious standards and might not want to be growing in who he is. He might be lax about the things that he watches on television and in the movies. He might mismanage his finances. But what do you do when you are painfully aware of some of these faults and your husband or somebody in your life has them? Are you able to accept your husband and look to his strong side and the things that he's good at? Or are you determined to control and correct him and bring him up to par? Sometimes we feel that helping our husbands change is something we're doing because we love them so much. But when you try to change your husband, ask yourself, why can't you accept him just the way he is, with his goods, bads, ups, and downs? If you did, you wouldn't try to change little things that annoy you. While we were at a marriage retreat, Gary and I were told to write down the things that bother us about each other. Well, that was a nice invitation. I had no problem coming up with 3 pages of stuff, and then we were going to get together and share them. I don't advocate that kind of marriage help. I think that there are too many things that we think that need to be cast down and not thought of. We need to train our thinking better, not write down every single thing that bothers you about each other. But those were the days where we were just learning about some of these precepts, and so I wrote down the things. I was so embarrassed when it came time to share the papers. I had 3 papers full of stuff, and Gary had nothing. He literally said, I really love you the way that you are. I don't want to change anything. That did not mean that I had nothing that should have been changed. It just meant that that's not the way he was seeing me. I was seeing him as a home improvement project, and he was accepting me and loving me just for who I was and wasn't. It just showed how picky I was and made me realize that I wouldn't want to be living with someone that could list 3 pages of things that they wanted to change about me. So I changed what I was looking for. And now I don't allow myself to list either in my head or on paper anything that I wish I could change about my husband. That's not my job. And you know what? That goes the same for other people too. You have no right to look at what other people are doing that you think they should change. That's not your job. Your job is to maybe influence and encourage them. Maybe you can model some good choices to them, but your job isn't to make their choices. Now, we're not talking about abusing or threatening situations where someone's behavior really needs to change or your safety's at risk, obviously. We're going to address abusive situations later when we come to chapter 13. But it's funny because I looked back on when I began teaching marriage classes. It was only a month after I got married, and we had a class with about 50 strong women, and we were looking at some of the things that bothered us, and we were writing them down to rip it up and say those are the things we weren't going to concentrate on. Now, some of the people had some fairly common complaints, and we said we are not going to look at those things. We're going to turn a blind eye for the faults and concentrate on the things that we love and appreciate instead. It was funny because years later, I was going about my business, and during the day, I happenstanced to see 2 of the women that were in that original class. I asked the first one what her husband was doing, and he was on the couch watching TV, one of the things that she had listed and decided not to allow to bother her. The other woman, her husband was golfing, and though that was one of the things that bothered her, but she had made it a point to decide to let that go and look for other good things instead that didn't bother her. My husband was traveling for work. Again, something that I had purposed to not let bother me. I was going to look for all the good things instead. But it just goes to show you that none of the behaviors changed, but all of our attitudes did. And knowing that we all adjusted our attitudes showed me that acceptance contributes to enjoyment of marriage. So why do we even want to change our husbands? You might see blind spots that he doesn't see, it might be overtly obvious to other people, and so you're embarrassed for him. You want to help them. Or sometimes their faults embarrass us, and we want to change them so that our public image is better. Other times we think our life would be easier if he changed. We wouldn't have to get a babysitter, would know what time he's coming home from work if he would just let us know, or something like that. Many times we want them to change for their own good. Maybe he spiraled out of control, and if he doesn't change, things are going to head for a disaster. Or maybe he needs intervention in order to save the relationship. But in any event, whether it's a situation you need to address or not, Proverbs 21:9 says, it's better to live alone in a tumble-down shack than to share a mansion with a nagging spouse. Human nature avoids pain more than seeking pleasure. And if it's really painful for your husband to come home and listen to your nagging voice, wanting him to change, or look in the magnifying mirror and see his pores, X32, X64, it might just be easier for him not to want to come home, or just easier to walk away. I've even met newlywed husbands who wanted to stay away from their wives because they didn't, their home wasn't their safe place. But here's what we need to do when we really accept our husbands for who they are. One, be reasonable and realistic. This is a guy that has strengths and weaknesses. Two, examine your own self for pride, self-righteousness, feeling superior, and see those things for the sins they are. Really, I will just tell you that I think self-righteousness and pride is way worse than a lot of the things that people get all picky about. Three, purposefully and willfully release your husband from your grip and let him be himself. That's a wonderful feeling. Shake those hands, let him go, and let him be. Four, give up the role of being your husband's image consultant, trainer, or 24/7 critique manager. He doesn't want to be married to that. He wants to be married to a lover, a friend, someone who's fun, that he could walk through life with, someone who gives him purpose and shares his meaning in life. Five, don't compare your husband to any other person. Six, refuse to see anything except good in him. Seven, learn when to speak up about what you admire in him and when to shut up when you see things you don't admire. Regardless of the reasons or the justification for wanting to change your husbands, when you look at the reasons why not to change them, it's easier to see why we need to let these things go. We need to let go of changing our husbands, and then we can learn how to identify and even change the nicest control freak habits we've gotten into. So chapter 4 is all about giving up control. Are you ready to give it up? Why shouldn't you try to control your husband? First, it's not your responsibility. Your goal is to know your place, stay there, and enjoy it. Well, first and foremost, it's not my role. So when we got married, there's nothing that says you're his image consultant, judge, jury. Plus, probably the reason you won your husband's heart in the first place is that he felt you admired and respected him. One thing that helps me a lot in any situation is to ask yourself, what is your role in that situation? What is your role in your husband's life? Is it to change him? Do you let him know that he gets on your nerves or point out his faults? Do you recite things that other people do that he doesn't? Do you leave articles around and drop hints? Do you try to make him feel guilty or play the martyr role? You need to be careful to operate within your role of responsibility. Then you're set free from being the person in charge of who your husband is. And you set him free to learn and change and grow independently of doing so in answer to you. Men aren't made to answer to women. If you are operating in the role of judge, jury, or image consultant, there's no way you're going to be able to live out wife, lover, friend, and soulmate at the same time. When you take one role on, you cross the other one out. You need to pick a role, and go with it. Men will thrive on your admiration, and a critic's role, by definition, is to express an unfavorable opinion of something. You cannot look for good and bad at the same time. So if you start looking for actions and character and strengths to compliment, you'll find them. It is better to influence a man than to demand things from him anyways. No one wants to be manipulated. As soon as I find out someone's trying to manipulate me, I shake it off and stop. I might even run the other way. I really take that in a bad way. But a man's temperament and his personality and his position makes it hard for him to take orders from a woman. But Remember, your role as an influencer has great impact. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Who will set a limit to the influence of a human being?" So when you set your husband free from answering to us, you set them free to be the person that they are, and you can be free to work on who you are. Freedom inspires your husband. Marriage is not an excuse to stop working on your behavior and character because you're so busy working on the other person's. You know, when other people tried to conform me into their ideas of what they thought, I did not want to do what they said because it was like a burden to me. But when the Lord puts something on your heart that needs to change, it's a freedom to you. So make sure that you're not putting burdens on people to do something, but you're letting God show them and themselves, let them realize what the things are that they want to change in their life so that when they do change, it's their freedom, it's their joy, it's their strength, it's their decision. It became apparent that even if I could manipulate my husband, it would be a burden that he would resent. But if you make your demands and you're standing in the way of what God impacts your husband to do, you need to get out of the way and leave the results to God. And then you can be a part of influencing and to have someone change in a more positive way. Also, if you choose to love and respect your husband regardless of whether he changes some of his actions or attitudes, he'll know you love and admire him in other areas. Just leave that responsibility to God. After you move out of the way, your husband won't have an excuse to hide behind, and he will have no one to answer except for himself for why he is changing or not changing. Now that is the freedom of letting God speak and staying in your role as a friend, lover, and soulmate. You know, a lot of times because we have more insight or we have more words or more emotions and we see deeper and more levels, we think we should intervene. But before a woman is even close to living up to her potential, she usually becomes more worried about changing her husband. And I love the way the Message Bible says this problem. Don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It is easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, "Let me wash your face for you," when your own face is distorted by contempt? It's this whole traveling roadshow mentality all over again, playing a holier-than-thou part instead of just living your part. Wipe that ugly sneer off your own face and you might be fit to offer a washcloth to your neighbor. Just think of where you'd be if all that energy spent on manipulating and changing your husband is redirected towards being the best you can be as a wife. You'll learn unconditional love and grow in every character definition of the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. And it should be a big relief to relinquish the job of changing your husband. You're supposed to be the leading lady of your own life was an epiphany to Iris in the movie The Holiday. You're the leading lady. You need to live the life you want to live. Your part. Not your husband's part. Your part. Your lines. What you say, where you go, and what you do. Let your husband live his part and walk alongside of him in this life. In your role as wife, lover, and friend, recognize when you're outside of that role and refuse it. Starve that behavior. Make choices to move away from actions that represent roles that you shouldn't be taking on. 2, it will extinguish his love for you. Keep putting firewood on the love fires and avoid extinguishing love. Just like a fire needs to be fed, so does your relationship. If you think you're staying the same, you're probably heading backwards. A lot of things contribute to extinguishing love. Unfortunately, men will take a lot of mistreatment, more than women, without saying anything. They may retreat into a shell and stop trying to impress their wives and lose the delight to discuss things with you if you're too critical and you don't see the best in him. They may turn to other things that will distract him, like hanging out with his friends or watching too much TV or playing video games or working a lot. A lot of men suffer and then they don't say anything. And then one day they're just done. They get up and walk away. The wife will come and say that one day her husband, he had enough. He was done. But the problem usually has been building over a long time. So let's face it. Your husband is never going to be romantically interested in his mother. So the moment you start acting like his mother, you're probably throwing water all over the fires of romantic love. And those feelings will be doused in a hurry if he looks at you as more of a mother image than his lover and friend and wife. There's a website that was called affair.com. I'm not sure if it's still up, but they had a great list of all the things that can extinguish and put out fires of love, and the things that would add and stir up fires of romance. I'm not going to take the time to go through them right now because I am actually redoing this lesson because the recorder didn't work. But you can see them in my book or you could read them at the website that I told you about. But it should be your goal to be sure you're not constantly dousing love and that you're kindling love. Your actions every day are bringing you closer to total extinguishment or total love. It's your choices, moment by moment. You are responsible for your actions and not your husband's. When you purpose to work on yourself to love someone the way you committed to, good things are bound to follow. The third reason not to try to change someone is because it makes you seem self-righteous and proud. You want to be humble and give your husband the freedom to grow. When you're constantly trying to change him, you are self-righteous and proud. And that is, like we said, just uglier than some of the things you're even trying to change. So we want to love our husband, not try to change. Let your man decide to change on his own when his goals or his vision changes. Everyone excels in where they feel confident. And if you're constantly letting your husband know where you're disappointed in him then and want to recite his weaknesses, he's going to retreat and think that there's nothing he can do to make you happy. He will stop trying if his efforts are brushed over or not recognized, and he won't be inspired to better himself. Men excel when they're appreciated and valued, and they should first of all feel that by his wife. Remember, God gave your husband freedom, and that is for he has his free will. Don't take his free will away. Accept him for who he is. He's part virtue and part vice. Look at the good things he is and not the things he lacks. Admire him in the areas you can admire him and put him first. When you give him some personal freedom, his mind will function without barriers and he'll be more receptive to new ideas and he'll be encouraged to be the best he can be. Shakespeare said, "A true friend is one that knows you as you are, understands where you have been, accepts what you have become, and still gently allows you to grow." Accept your husband where he is and allow him the chance to grow. Pride constantly tempts us to focus on changing our spouses, and then we neglect our own weaknesses. Concentrate on your own growth and you'll avoid pride. It's not wrong to hope for positive changes in your husband, but you'll definitely have a better and more enjoyable marriage if you stop looking to change him and instead work on your own behavior. Besides, God can use your marriage to teach you how to love. Don't run away from the challenges that marriage presents because marriage can make you stronger and more unselfish and wiser. Remember, Proverbs 9:10 says, "Hatred stirs up contentions, but love covers all transgressions." This means when you're objectionable, abhorrent, obnoxious, unpalatable, disagreeable, distasteful, you're going to experience strife and discord. But when you choose to love and be devoted to someone, be benevolent towards that person, it covers. That Hebrew word means to fill up what is lacking in others' lives. And I like that scripture because I think it has two different sides. When you choose to love instead of hate, you're going to wipe out sin in your own life. So not only with the way you choose to feel towards your husbands and others, but also with every relationship you have, you won't be judging, criticizing, being jealous, looking down at people, holding someone captive to perfectionism or your way or standards you have for your own life but they don't have for theirs. Love will stop a multitude of sin from entering your own heart. Choose love without ceasing. Fervent, extended, stretched out love. The Bible says in 1 Peter 4:8, most of all, love each other as if your life depended on it. Love makes up for practically anything. So, what about the things that your husband does that really bother you? Well, when he has a steady diet of praise and true appreciation, you can ask him to pick up his dirty socks or whatever it is. Appreciation can inspire someone to reach a higher potential. My mom raised me that way, and I raised my children that way. I refuse to have any other kind of love than the 1 Corinthians 13 love that bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. You need to choose to believe the best about your children. They're going to have lapses, but you need to choose to believe the best. Believe that they will make the right choice and pray that they do. If they don't, pray that they can see the results of the wrong choices and see the reasons that our family chooses higher standards to live than what they did. Also, if your children, and as they grow into adulthood, they'll know that they had parents that believed the best about them. That is such a unique thing in this world. We always see the best, the worst. We need to believe in people and lift them to the next level. One of the things I appreciate about my husband is he really never tries to change me. I have never felt unloved. I'm more emotional. I like always see things and I have to work at making sure my husband doesn't feel less than totally loved and accepted. But I can tend to blurt out things, and that's why I was able to write a book over all the things about all the things that helped me to gain mastery over these things that are so easy to be sloppy about that will cut into the success of your relationship. We don't want to be tossed about by the events of each day. I love the one song called "Who Will Love Me for Me" by J.J. Heller, and it just talks about someone and different people in different circumstances that are looking for someone who will love them just for who they are. And it says, "Who will love me for me? No one has shown me what love really means." And then he hears from Jesus and he says, "I know you've murdered. I know you've lied. I've watched you suffer all your life. And now that you'll listen, I'll tell you that I will love you for you. Not for what you've done or what you will become. I will love you for you. I will give you the love that you never knew." That's so beautiful. When you love your husband or anyone or your family or your friends for who they are and in spite of their shortcomings, that is an attribute that not only pleases God, it's just like God because God is love. And when you get out of the way, God will love through you. You never need to run out of it. That's the best way that you will look like God is when you love people. And that love is most clearly seen when they don't deserve it, not when they deserve it. Most human dysfunctions stem from a lack of love. When someone loves you, it inspires you to be better. I want to love my husband more unconditionally because of the way he loves me. Not because of the way he picks at me. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, Romans 5:8 says. We have to show our spouses that while they're still not perfect, we can die to our selfishness and our agendas to just love them. Joyce Myers wrote a book called The Love Revolution. And it reminds us that for our love to be revolutionary, we need to practice it every day until the culture of selfishness that we feed so much gives way to a new culture of concern for others. You can see we need to be challenged by a love revolution. Besides, when you love, you know that God is working in your heart. anyone can love you. They could be blind. Love is blind. They could not see you. They might be just overlookers, or they might just not know the whole you. But when you love, really love God's way, it is an attribute that shows that you are developing God's character in you, because you're loving someone that's not perfect, that has got a lot of faults sometimes and a lot of weaknesses, but you're choosing to love them. Plus, do you really think you're a better person than your husband is? You need to see your own weaknesses so you can accept someone else's. When you demand that someone change for your sake, you are trying to bend the world around your comfort and your needs and your happiness. That's pride and arrogance and self-centeredness, and God won't bless it. One time a friend said, "You're so kind." I had to say, look, in my life, I've needed a lot of grace and kindness, and it has made it easier for me to give it to other people. When you're willing to give grace, it'll be easier for the recipient of that grace to give it back too. Freedom of choice is one of the most fundamental laws of life. Mankind does not develop or experience happiness without it. God created us on the earth, and he allowed the forces of evil to be present to tempt us and try us. And he knew that some of us would fall and would have harvests that come from disobeying the things that he told us to instruct us in the ways of life. But he also knew that without freedom, mankind couldn't grow and develop. Man has to be given a choice and make that choice himself. If God could risk man's future and happiness to give us freedom, we should allow our husband the same privilege. Let him do what he wants to do and be what he wants to be without you assuming a role that even God doesn't. Men need freedom of choice when it comes to spiritual matters too. There's always going to be wars over religious freedoms and rights and choices, and people are going to always disagree if Jesus is going to return again mid-trib, post-trib, pre-trib. There's a lot of scholars that are going to always disagree about things with religion. A wise woman allows her husband the freedom to choose in this area of life. One woman I met had gotten to know the love of God and made Jesus the Lord of her life, but her husband didn't know about that. He didn't want anything to do with church or God. So every week that she asked him if he minded if she went to church, she would go if he said it was okay and ask him to go, but she always allowed him the freedom to choose. After almost 30 years, now I personally know this couple, this is a true story. One morning, she got up to go to church, and he was getting ready and went with her and turned his life over to Jesus Christ and continued to go with her every week. When his opinion is respected, a man is freer to consider his wife's viewpoint than if he feels like he's been backed into a corner and has no other option. Now, Stephen Stosny wrote an article called Freedom to Love. He said, "When did I love you degenerate into meet my needs?" He says, to be free to do something, you must be free not to do it. We are free to love only to the extent that we're not forced into it by guilt, shame, fear of abandonment, or worst of all, the interpretation of vulnerable feelings as emotional needs. No matter how seductive "I need you" may sound in popular songs, the partner who needs you cannot love you. If someone needs you, they'll probably abuse you more than give you freely their love and support. Most painful conflicts in relationships are one partner making an emotional request motivated by a need, and then the other person, motivated by a different need, regards that request as a demand. So any disagreement can feel like abuse when the perceived need of one party to be validated crashes into the need of the other person not to be manipulated. So one person argues, "If you loved me, you'd do what I want or see the world the way I do. If you loved me, you wouldn't control me," the other person counters. The problem isn't the language that couples use or the content of their arguments. As long as they perceive themselves to have emotional needs that their partner has to gratify, their love is reduced to, I need my needs met. And the other partner is perceiving that as give up who you are because you have to meet their needs. The freedom to love is a core value issue. What's more important to you, getting your perceived needs met or loving someone freely? What gives you the better chance of being loved in return? Stosny's observations show the difference between toddler love, which is driven by needs, whether perceived or real, and adult love, which is driven by desire and values. It's like when God's children, they're like, God, give me, I need, I want, I'm in this trouble, bail me out, help me, help me, help me. Or a more mature child of God going to him saying, God, is there something you want me to do for you today? I love that movie, What About Bob? Bob walks around grasping his hands towards him saying, I need, I need, I need. It's so funny that if I find myself sounding a little needy, I kind of break into it. I need, I need. And it makes me realize how ridiculous I sound and how little I want to be a little toddler love walking around. Once you stop expecting your husband to be perfect and give your needs to the Lord, you can love your husband for who he is and set him free to grow. Besides, God's able to meet your needs way better than anyone else. So give your needs to God and let other people be. And number four reason, the fourth reason not to try to control people is it doesn't work. So give it up. That's the most compelling reason why you shouldn't try to change your husband is or anyone, is it doesn't work. Makes him retreat into a shell, creates discord, cools romance, and it makes people want to stay away from you. When my toilet overflowed and I couldn't plunge it, I knew it didn't work, so I left the plunger in the toilet. I didn't want anyone to think it was going to operate. It didn't work. So just know that you trying to change your husband or anyone is not going to work. You can squeeze the life right out of people. When you find fault with yourself or others, it becomes a habit and you'll do it more and more. Soon everyone will avoid you and no one will want to be around someone finding fault all the time. It was like in that movie Beaches, I remember when the mother told the daughter after the daughter ran everyone off, she said, no one is perfect enough for you. You've run everybody off from you because no one ever felt good enough around to be what you expected them to be. Don't run people off from you. Love them and accept them for who they are. Don't be so critical, fault-finding, and make that a part of your character. It's such an ugly way to look at the world. Your life is a gift, and the only way you're going to enjoy that is when you look and see it for the gift it is. And that's going to see the beauty of the trees without examining the bark for any signs of maybe an irregular piece of the tree growing or something weird happening that is part of every tree. Look at the beauty in the people around you and in the world around you and make that a habit. You'll be so much happier and enjoy your life so much more. Stop criticizing yourself and your husband and others. Look for good things. Rehearse them. Build up people. Don't tear them down. Build up relationships. If you've got a habit for being critical, drop it. Remember, it is nicer, it's better to dwell in the corner of the housetop, exposed to the weather, than in a house shared with a nagging, quarrelsome, fault-finding woman. Plus, a man expects his wife to be the one secure haven where he can relax and be himself and feel secure. When you're always dissatisfied with him, he'll feel insecure and unappreciated, just like you would feel if he was always picking on you. So then he won't want to get any better. He'll just want to stay away from you. He'll resent you. He'll argue with you. He'll defend himself. He'll retreat. And now as he tries to hold on to who he is, he'll resent you and arguments will come and he'll be the exact opposite. It's not worth it. It doesn't work. The damage to your relationship and problems in your home aren't worth gambling away. When it becomes more important for you to love him than to change him, the love and harmony in your home will reflect the wisdom of that choice. It's way more inspiring to be the best you can for someone who loves and appreciates you for who you are, rather than trying to do something nice for someone who's always looking to pick you apart. So be that person. Be that person who is not looking to pick someone apart, but looking for something to love and to redeem from the day. Once we were driving through Italy and Gary and I we had a lot of time together. I was so excited. The more excited I get, the more I start talking, and I'm talking fast, and I just wanted to talk. I said, Gary, talk to me. He said, about what? I said, about anything. What do you like? What don't you like? What are your dreams? What plans do you have? Who do you like? What don't you like? What's your favorite this? What's your favorite vacation? Talk to me about anything. The problems you were at work. What's your best memory? The worst memory? A funny thing? Anything. Well, he thought for a few seconds and said, that's a lot of stuff to talk about. Then there was silence. Well, I looked around a little. Then I decided, well, he's not in the mood to talk. So I'll just let him be. I'll just talk because I'm in the mood to talk. So I just saw what I observed, looked at the unusual sights, called his attention to the details. Gary was happy to drive around and look in silence. So I decided I'd rather let him be content in who he is, without trying to pull conversation from him. We're different personalities and we enjoy things in different ways. So I did start to pull him out and try to get him to test some Italian words, but that actually turned out really funny because he is definitely not a stickler for detail. In words, anyways, other things he is. But the best way to love someone is to allow them to feel safe with you. To know that whether they want to talk or not, you love and accept them just the way they are. So be that person. Be that safe place. And watch out for people putting people on the defense. If you're starting to talk to someone and you're on the defense, there's a dividing fence. And if you're starting to talk to someone and they put themselves on the defense and they lift their hands up in the conversation, kind of, hey, back off, then stop talking. Because when someone's on the defense, a lot of times they say things they don't mean to. When your spouse knows that, or anyone knows that discussing feelings with you will end up in a debate, they'll learn that your motive is not to understand them, but to undermine them, and they'll stop and give up. Remember, love is demonstrated by bearing, believing, hoping, and enduring when faced with opposition. I love this poem about friendship. Oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts nor measure words, but pouring them all right out, just as they are, chaff and grain together, certain that a faithful hand will take and sift them, keep what is worth keeping, and with the breath of kindness, blow the rest away. If your spouse doesn't feel safe with you and feels that they need to jump through hoops to be what you want them to be, make some changes. Ask or tell them, this is what I thought you said, or is that what you meant to say? Make your spouse feel safe and enjoy the inexpressible comfort defined in the poem above. If you want your husband to love you, be lovable. Be a safe place. He needs to feel safe around you and secure in who he is and in who he isn't. Maybe you don't feel like there's anything to admire in your husband, but think of the things he's done, how he handles work, how he relates to others, the things other people appreciate about him. Listen to the things he talks about and let him know some of the things you admire in him, even if they seem trivial. Look at his faults and see if they're a negative expression of something positive. If your husband's obsessive or demanding, he might just be a hard worker and pursuing excellence and gets too picky on himself. A strength is often displayed as a weakness. Look beneath the surface to see the driving force behind that behavior. Inspire the positive demonstration of that strength. That'll really help you when you're raising your kids too, because a lot of times you'll see your kids' strength through their weaknesses first, and then you have to help them to turn those weaknesses around into the strength that they're demonstrating. For example, I had a strong-willed child who had temper tantrums, and the problem wasn't her strong will, because she needed that to swim against popular opinion and make good choices in her life. The problem was in the abuse of her strong will through temper tantrums. So once she tweaked that and turned it around, her strong will was her greatest asset. I apply that principle to my life too. I work on piano pieces. When I used to learn the concertos, I would work the parts that were weak so much so that when I got to them, they became my best. That's taking your weaknesses and making them your strength. And if you apply that same principle to the weaknesses in your character, you grow as a person. So here's a poem called Request to a Wife by Richard Armour. Dear wife, I need adoring looks, the kind I read about in books. I want esteem, I want affection, please, darling, beam in my direction. Don't, dearest, frown and squint your eyes. Don't cut me down to proper size. Oh, do not fear and do not doubt me. I want to hear the good about me. So if you'd be in married clover, make over me. Don't make me over. Anyways, a writer called Tara Parker Pope wrote that many marital disagreements can't be solved. And one study, researchers interviewed the same couple 4 years apart, and 70% of the people were still talking and fighting about the same problems in the same way that they were 4 years earlier. So now people are working on acceptance therapy and encouraging people to accept the enduring foibles of their spouses rather than trying to change them. So putting some of these habits into practice will help you as well. And even if no one changes, you'll like yourself better, because you won't be walking around trying to change everybody else. You'll be looking to how to bring yourself up to the next level and how to enjoy people and your life more. So thanks a lot for joining me. Next week, we're going to talk about chapters 5 and chapter 6. And it's going to be about when something has to give and being reasonable and realistic, something that's going to help us all the time in our relationships. Have a good week.